Chapter 6. Shaking the water drops from his low-crowned glazed hat, he said, "I must ask for a few minutes' shelter, comrades, or I shall be wedded to my skin before I get to Casterbridge." Make yourself at home, master, said the shepherd, perhaps a trifle less heartily than on the first occasion. Not that Fennel had the least tinge of niggardliness in his composition, but the room was far from large, spare chairs were not numerous, and damp companions were not altogether desirable at close quarters for the women and girls in their bright-colored gowns. However, the second comer, after taking off his greatcoat and hanging his hat on a nail in one of the ceiling beams, as if he had been specially invited to put it there, advanced and sat down at the table. This had been pushed so closely into the chimney corner, to give all available room to the dancers, that its inner edge grazed the elbow of the man who had ensconced himself by the fire, and thus the two strangers were brought into close companionship. They nodded to each other by way of breaking the ice of an acquaintance, and the first stranger handed his neighbor the family mug, a huge vessel of brown ware, having its upper edge worn away like a threshold by the rub of whole generations of thirsty lips, that had gone the way of all flesh, and bearing the following inscription burnt upon its rotund side in yellow letters, "There is no fun until I come." The other man, nothing loth, raised the mug to his lips, and drank on, and on, and on, till a curious blueness overspread the countenance of the shepherd's wife, who had regarded with no little surprise the first stranger's free offer to the second, of what did not belong to him to dispense. "I knew it," said the toper to the shepherd with much satisfaction. "When I walked up your garden before coming in, and saw the hives all of a row, I said to myself, where there's bees there's honey, and where there's honey there's mead. But mead of such a truly comfortable sort as this, I really didn't expect to meet in my older days." He took yet another pull at the mug, till it assumed an ominous elevation. "Glad you enjoy it," said the shepherd warmly. "It is goodish mead," assented Mrs. Fennel, with an absence of enthusiasm which seemed to say that it was possible to buy praise for one's cellar at too heavy a price. "It is trouble enough to make, and really I hardly think we shall make any more. For honey sells well, and we ourselves can make shift with a drop o' small mead and metheglin for common use from the comb washings." "Oh, but you will never have the heart," reproachfully cried the stranger in cinder gray, after taking up the mug a third time and setting it down empty. "I love mead, when 'tis old like this, as I love to go to church o' Sundays, or to relieve the needy any day of the week." Said the man in the chimney corner, who, in spite of the taciturnity induced by the pipe of tobacco, could not or would not refrain from this slight testimony to his comrade's humor. "Now the old mead of those days, brewed of the purest first-year maiden honey, £4 to the gallon with its due complement of white of eggs, cinnamon, ginger, cloves, mace, rosemary, yeast, and processes of working, bottling, and cellaring tasted remarkably strong, but it did not taste so strong as it actually was." Hence, presently, the stranger in cinder gray at the table, moved by its creeping influence, unbuttoned his waistcoat, threw himself back in his chair, spread his legs, and made his presence felt in various ways. "Well, well, as I say," he resumed, "I am going to Casterbridge, and to Casterbridge I must go. I should have been almost there by this time, but the rain drove me into your dwelling, and I'm not sorry for it." "You don't live in Casterbridge?" said the shepherd. "Not as yet, though I shortly mean to move there. Going to set up in trade, perhaps?" Said the shepherd's wife. "It is easy to see that the gentleman is rich, and don't want to work at anything. apostrophe apostrophe, the cinder gray stranger paused, as if to consider whether he would accept that definition of himself. He presently rejected it by answering, "Rich is not quite the word for me, dame. I do work, and I must work. And even if I only get to Casterbridge by midnight, I must begin work there at 8 tomorrow morning. Yes, head or wet, blow or snow, famine or sword, my day's work tomorrow must be done." Apostrophe, apostrophe, poor man. Then, in spite o' seeming, you be worse off than we? Apostrophe, replied the shepherd's wife. 'Tis the nature of my trade, men and maidens. 'Tis the nature of my trade more than my poverty. Dot dot, but really and truly I must up and off, or I shan't get a lodging in the town. Apostrophe, apostrophe, however, the speaker did not move, and directly added, "There's time for one more draft of friendship before I go, and I'd perform it at once, if the mug were not dry." Apostrophe, apostrophe, here's a mug o' small, apostrophe, said Mrs. Fennel. "Small, we call it, though to be sure 'tis only the first wash o' the combs." Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, apostrophe, said the stranger disdainfully. "I won't spoil your first kindness by partaking o' your second." Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly not, apostrophe, broke in Fennel. "We don't increase and multiply every day, and I'll fill the mug again." Apostrophe, apostrophe, he went away to the dark place under the stairs where the barrel stood. The shepherdess followed him. "Why should you do this?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said reproachfully, as soon as they were alone. "He's emptied it once, though it held enough for 10 people, and now he's not contented why the small, but must needs call for more o' the strong, and a stranger unbeckoning to any of us. For my part, I don't like the look o' the man at all." Apostrophe, apostrophe, but he's in the house, my honey, and 'tis a wet night, and a christening. Days it, what's a cup of mead more or less? There'll be plenty more next be burning. Apostrophe, apostrophe, very well this time, then, apostrophe, she answered, looking wistfully at the barrel. But what is the man's calling, and where is he one of, that he should come in, and join us like this? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know. I'll ask him again. Apostrophe, the catastrophe of having the mug drained dry at one pull by the stranger in cinder gray was effectually guarded against this time by Mrs. Fennel. She poured out his allowance in a small cup, keeping the large one at a discreet distance from him. When he had tossed off his portion, the shepherd renewed his inquiry about the stranger's occupation. The latter did not immediately reply, and the man in the chimney corner, with sudden demonstrativeness, said, "Anybody may know my trade, I'm a wheelwright." Apostrophe, apostrophe, a very good trade for these parts, apostrophe, said the shepherd. "And anybody may know mine, if they've the sense to find it out, apostrophe, said the stranger in cinder gray. You may generally tell what a man is by his claws, apostrophe, observed the hedge carpenter, looking at his own hands. My fingers be as full of thorns as an old pin cushion is of pins. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the hands of the man in the chimney corner instinctively sought the shade, and he gazed into the fire as he resumed his pipe. The man at the table took up the hedge carpenter's remark, and added smartly, "True, but the oddity of my trade is that, instead of setting a mark upon me, it sets a mark upon my customers." Apostrophe, apostrophe, no observation being offered by anybody in elucidation of this enigma, the shepherd's wife once more called for a song. The same obstacles presented themselves, as at the former time one had no voice, another had forgotten the first verse. The stranger at the table, whose soul had now risen to a good working temperature, relieved the difficulty by exclaiming that, to start the company, he would sing himself. Thrusting one thumb into the armhole of his waistcoat, he waved the other hand in the air, and, with an extemporizing gaze at the shining sheep crooks above the mantelpiece, began. "Oh, my trade, it is the rarest one, simple shepherds, all my trade is a sight to see. For my customers I tie, and take them up on high, and waft them to a far country. apostrophe apostrophe, the room was silent, when he had finished the verse with one exception, that of the man in the chimney corner, who, at the singer's word, chorus, joined him in a deep bass voice of musical relish, and wafted him to a far country. Apostrophe apostrophe, Oliver Giles, John Pitcher the dairyman, the parish clerk, the engaged man of 50, the row of young women against the wall, seemed lost in thought, not of the gayest kind. The shepherd looked meditatively on the ground, the shepherdess gazed keenly at the singer, and with some suspicion. She was doubting whether this stranger were merely singing an old song from recollection, or was composing one there, and then for the occasion. All were as perplexed at the obscure revelation as the guests at Belshazzar's feast, except the man in the chimney corner, who quietly said, "Second verse, stranger, apostrophe and smoked on." The singer thoroughly moistened himself from his lips inwards, and went on with the next stanza as requested. "My tools are but common ones, simple shepherds, all my tools are no sight to see. A little hempen string, and a post whereon to swing, are implements enough for me." Apostrophe apostrophe, Shepherd Fennel glanced round. There was no longer any doubt that the stranger was answering his question rhythmically. The guests one and all started back with suppressed exclamations. The young woman engaged to the man of 50 fainted halfway, and would have proceeded, but finding him wanting in alacrity for catching her, she sat down trembling. "Oh, he's the apostrophe apostrophe," whispered the people in the background, mentioning the name of an ominous public officer. "He's come to do it. 'Tis to be at Casterbridge jail tomorrow, the man for sheep stealing, the poor clockmaker we heard of, who used to live away at Shottsford, and had no work to do, Timothy Summers, whose family were a-starving, and so he went out of Shottsford by the high road, and took a sheep in open daylight, defying the farmer and the farmer's wife and the farmer's lad, and every man jack among them. He," and they nodded towards the stranger of the deadly trade, "is come from up the country to do it, because there's not enough to do in his own county town, and he's got the place here now our own county man's dead. He's going to live in the same cottage under the prison wall." Apostrophe apostrophe, the stranger in cinder gray took no notice of this whispered string of observations, but again wetted his lips. Seeing that his friend in the chimney corner was the only one who reciprocated his joviality in any way, he held out his cup towards that appreciative comrade, who also held out his own. They clinked together, the eyes of the rest of the room hanging upon the singer's actions. He parted his lips for the third verse, but at that moment another knock was audible upon the door. This time the knock was faint and hesitating. The company seemed scared. The shepherd looked with consternation towards the entrance, and it was with some effort that he resisted his alarmed wife's deprecatory glance, and uttered for the third time the welcoming words, "Walk in." Apostrophe apostrophe, the door was gently opened, and another man stood upon the mat. He, like those who had preceded him, was a stranger. This time it was a short, small personage, of fair complexion, and dressed in a decent suit of dark clothes. "Can you tell me the way to?" Apostrophe apostrophe, he began. When, gazing round the room, to observe the nature of the company amongst whom he had fallen, his eyes lighted on the stranger in cinder gray. It was just at the instant when the latter, who had thrown his mind into his song with such a will that he scarcely heeded the interruption, silenced all whispers and inquiries by bursting into his third verse. "Tomorrow is my working day, simple shepherds, all tomorrow is a working day for me. For the farmer's sheep is slain, and the lad who did it tan, and on his soul, may God ha merk why." Apostrophe apostrophe, the stranger in the chimney corner, waving cups with the singer so heartily that his meat splashed over on the hearth, repeated in his bass voice as before, "And on his soul, may God ha merk why." Apostrophe apostrophe, all this time the third stranger had been standing in the doorway. Finding now that he did not come forward, or go on speaking, the guests particularly regarded him. They noticed to their surprise that he stood before them the picture of abject terror, his knees trembling, his hand shaking so violently that the door latch by which he supported himself rattled audibly. His white lips were parted, and his eyes fixed on the merry officer of justice in the middle of the room. A moment more, and he had turned, closed the door, and fled. What a man can it be? Said the shepherd. The rest, between the awfulness of their late discovery, and the odd conduct of this third visitor, looked as if they knew not what to think, and said nothing. Instinctively they withdrew further and further from the grim gentleman in their midst, whom some of them seemed to take for the Prince of Darkness himself, till they formed a remote circle, an empty space of floor being left between them and him. Circulus, Cujus Centrum Diabolus. The room was so silent, though there were more than 20 people in it, that nothing could be heard but the patter of the rain against the window shutters, accompanied by the occasional hiss of a stray drop that fell down the chimney into the fire, and the steady puffing of the man in the corner, who had now resumed his pipe of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.